Today on Basic, the co-creator of Comedy Central's Broad City, Abby Jacobson.
I show up to my practice team one night, and my friend Tim Martin, who he had brought these two new people that he met in the class, Alana and her brother Elliot. It was very confusing, and like Arrested Development had sort of just stopped, and Alana looked so much like Alia Shawkat. I truly was like, the girl from Arrested Development is in my practice group. Like, this is nuts. The first night we met, Alana and I just hit it off in a way that I don't know if I ever had hit it off with a new friend right away. And we're talking, and she's talking about where she's from, and I had gone to college with someone from that town, and I say their name, and she knows them. And I was like, this is not the girl from Arrested Development. I remember feeling in that bar on that night, I've never met anyone like this.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Basic, the official podcast of the unofficial history of cable television. I'm Doug Herzog, former TV executive, and there's no crying in podcasts.
And I'm Jen Chaney, TV critic for Vulture and New York Magazine. And actually, I think there's a lot of crying in podcasts.
Well, at least I haven't made you cry yet, Jen, and vice versa. So I think So our guest today is the co-creator of Comedy Central's Broad City, and Jen and I are both big fans, Abby Jacobson.
Alongside Alana Glazer, Abby Jacobson created a truly funny, quirky show that resonated with viewers, including myself and critics alike, and really stood out amongst Comedy Central's male-dominated lineup.
Abby also co-created and stars in the new Amazon series, A League of Their Own, which is based on the famous 90s film about the first all-female baseball team. We'll talk to Abby all about this and hang around afterwards as Jen and I talk to each other about everything she told us.
Abby Jacobson, we are so excited to have you here on Basic. And we want to start by asking you the same question that we ask of all of our guests at the beginning of a podcast, which is, do you remember when you first got cable television, or was it something you always had?
I was very young when we got it, but I remember having way more channels to surf through. Mm-hmm. Maybe in elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Were you like a Nickelodeon or a Disney person, or like what was your thing?
You know, I don't know. I was not maybe a touch Nickelodeon and Disney, but I think we watched a ton of reruns of old sitcoms in my house versus like new programming for like the Nickelodeon, like all the young stars that are now, or young stars then that are now like big movie stars. Like I had no idea that they were on Nickelodeon.
So maybe you're more Nick at Night.
I was way more Nick at Night. I don't remember exactly when I got cable, but you know, I was really obsessed with SNL, but I was obsessed with like my current SNL at the time, which was probably like Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry into like Amy Poehler and them. But I was really obsessed with the first season's cast because there were reruns on Comedy Central. And, you know, I just bought it actually recently, but Comedy Central also would air Gilda Live. Mm-hmm. And so like Comedy Central, I think for me was channel 50 or 52. And my brother and I were always watching like reruns of old SNLs and stuff. And SNL was a thing that my parents would let me stay up for every once in a while as a kid. And I was just like, what are they doing? Like, that was what I wanted to do. And so as a kid, I'm from Philly, and my parents were very sweet, and they let me sign up for classes at the Walnut Street Theater every Saturday. Every so often I would take a class down there, which was like a big, I felt like I was basically going to Hollywood, but I was just going to like downtown Philly. So I was interested, but it just like did not see, like I just didn't really see like a path forward. And then in middle school, again on the SNL track, I was really into Mike Myers on SNL, and I started impersonating him doing coffee talk in school. you remember like student council?
Yeah.
Like your homeroom. I got elected my student council representative. And so like once a month you'd go to a meeting and then you'd come back to your homeroom and like report to them. Mm-hmm. What's like the dance is coming up or like mm-hmm. the vending machine or like after school sports, whatever, you know, you'd like tell them what's going on. And I started doing it as Linda Richmond, Mike Myers' character. And it killed. Like it was the first taste, you know, and I made my own, I wrote my own bits. It was just me doing that character. And I don't know, like it hit for the teachers too, which was, I think was more where my eyes were. I was like, you can't like, I don't know, laughter, you know, now I'm working on a show that is a more of a blend of comedy and drama. And sometimes I'm a little more unsure how the drama is working until we like really get into post. Whereas like the comedy, you like know, you know, right away, you know, the laughter. And so even in student council, I was like, this is going like, this is, I'm getting a taste of like, kind of like how I can like harness a laugh. I moved to New York right after college. And I was like, this is really, oh, I see the connection. Like, this is really me wanting to do comedy and not really knowing how to like say that, because that's such a scary thing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of school, I started realizing I really wanted to be an actor, even though that was like so unheard of. And I applied to the Atlantic Theater Conservatory, which is David Mamet's school. Hilariously. I don't know why that's hilarious. Just like, it's just hilarious because I really did not belong there. And I don't think I do. And it's just not how my brain works. So I went there, moved up to New York, thought I would go there for 2 years for this more dramatic program. And it was just very heady and not how my brain worked. And I'm like really truncating this, but I quit that and I had a day job. And my roommate at the time, who had gone to MICO with me, said, you know, I really think you should go check out this place, the Upright Citizens Brigade, what you did in college. Like, I just think you would like it. And I had never heard of it. And I went there and I feel like the rest of my life, I mean, I'm like, that's like the moment everything really shifted for me.
So when you got to UCB, that's really where you met Alana Glazer, who you obviously worked with on Broad City. Could you talk a little bit about, well, first of all, what Upright Citizens Brigade is like for people who aren't familiar with it? And then also just the connection that you felt with Alana when you first met each other.
Yeah, so the UCB is the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. It was founded in Chicago by Amy Poehler, Matt Walsh, Ian Roberts, and Matt Besser. I love that I like still kind of have the, this is something I used to say so much and I haven't said that in a long time.
They're the UCB Beatles.
And they came out of the Chicago improv and sketch scene. They had a TV show on Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I came to it, I came to the first show in 2006. And it had been, you know, it was already such a space where a lot of the creators that we love had already been playing for a long time and already had that. I think this, where I found it, it was in its second location in New York. Anyway, I threw myself into that. So I worked at Anthropology at Rockefeller Center at the time. Truly, there's a lot of anthropologies in New York City. And I got the one at Rockefeller Center because it was close to SNL. Like,
just in case Amy Poehler walked in.
Well, it was just like this thing of like, I'm right here. I'm there. Like, I just wanted to be like as close as I could. And I like walked in to the bottom of Rockefeller Center every day to work. And it was just like, it made me feel like, even though that was like, that dream was and is so far away, I felt like that actual geographical proximity was like, I made it below it. You know, I don't know.
It was you're in the building.
I'm in the building. And
there's like an emergency and they need someone for a sketch. Like maybe Lauren Michaels will run into anthropology and need you to come on upstairs.
They might need clothes. And yeah, exactly. I don't know. They might need an emergency cast member. I don't know. But and so when a lot of people's stories, when you start there, is like all you want to do is get on that stage. And sort of like the trajectory that I was watching was you took a lot of classes and sort of to like train, like it's like working out. You're working these improv muscles so that you can get on stage and like not think at all, mm-hmm. which is very different than Mammoth School, which was like all about thinking. And so that's why I was really drawn to the UCB. But, you know, the goal was like to get on a Herald team, which is like the, like being on like, a theater's like house ensemble, right? That would be like the equivalent or whatever.
Or student council.
Yeah, or student council. Yeah, getting selected. And it's like a very, there's like 8 people per team and it's like super selective, like hundreds and hundreds of people audition and it's really hard to get on. And then on top of that, there was like 1 or 2 women on each team. If you're lucky, mm-hmm. you know? And so I was there I auditioned for years and like, couldn't get on there and like, couldn't find my footing, even though I felt like I was getting better and I was starting to feel that confidence. And while I was trying, you join these practice groups. So you practice at night with your team that you made, and then you perform on weekends in like little dive bars or little black box theaters all over the city. And you give your audience like shots to come. It's like, you're like buying them tickets to come to see your show. Anyway, I show up to my practice team one night and my friend, Tim Martin, who was one of the most brilliant improvisers I knew it and have worked with. Anyway, he had brought these 2 new people that he met in the class, Alana and her brother Elliot. And there weren't any other women on our practice group. And they were like, great. And it was very confusing. And like, I write about this in my book a lot, but Arrested Development had sort of just stopped. And Alana looked so much like Alia Shawkat. And mm-hmm. I did not know Alia Shawkat's name. But I truly was like, the girl from Arrested Development is in my practice group. Like, this is nuts. And also I was like, you know what? The show ended. Maybe she moved to New York and like, she would be doing improv. Like, that makes sense. Like, I was like, this is nuts. And so the first night we met that they came, we go to McManus, Peter McManus, which is a bar in New York City, Irish pub that was known to be the bar that a lot of the improvisers and comedians would go to after shows. And we're sitting on the end of the bar and Alana and I just hit it off, like in a way that I don't know if I ever had, like had hit it off with a new friend right away. And we're talking and she's talking about where she's from. And I had gone to college with someone from that town and I say their name and she knows them. And I was like, this is not the girl from Arrested Development. Cause like I would have known if my friends have got, you know, and then I was like, okay, it's not her, but she looks just like her. But I remember feeling in that bar on that night, like I've never met anyone like this. And we just like cracked each other up. There was like it was a very unique dynamic.
How did the web series sort of prepare you for ultimately having an actual television show?
I'm so happy that we did that before pitching and getting an opportunity to write the longer version, because it just let us really experiment mm-hmm. and really sort of define the core of the show, which is this relationship. And neither of us had ever written for TV before. And I think if we hadn't done that, it would have been like a lot more like, what should this be about, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was more defined, I think, after the web series.
you said that you, one of the things you loved about doing the web series was that you could make something and you guys were really in control of it. You didn't have to deal with gatekeepers to do what you wanted to do. Once you get to a cable network, did you still feel like, obviously there's a lot more people involved and people with opinions involved, but did you still feel like you had control over it? I'm sure it was very different.
You know, listen, I've been really lucky. Like the two shows I've gotten to make, I do feel like, to in as much as I can, I do feel like I have a lot of creative control, mm-hmm. which is, has been incredible. But when we, right when we started, I mean, we sold it to FX first.
And then I forgot the FX part. So going back to Jen's question, you sold it to FX first?
Yeah, I will say to Kent's credit, we pitched it to you guys and I think he wanted it then. And we went to FX first.
That's Kent Alterman, by the way, who was the president of Comedy Central, was actually the person who bought Broad City along with Amy Schumer, along with Nathan Fielder, yeah. along with Nick Kroll, mm-hmm. along with Key and Peele. Mm-hmm. The great and Kent so Alterman.
Kent Alterman. I mean, I could do a whole episode about Kent.
So wait, so how did we get it back from FX?
So we,
I don't remember
FX
the story.
FX bought it. And we, I don't know what it was. It might have been like It's Always Sunny. Like, I don't know what it was that like made us want to go there. Mm-hmm. Because we never like defined ourselves. We weren't a sketch show. And I think at the time, Comedy Central was more sketch shows than scripted. And so we were like, wow, like It's Always Sunny felt more akin to like what we were trying to do anyway. They wanted us to bring a showrunner on and we developed it. And we thought it was really great and it got to the point and, you know, we had all these episodes to like proof of concept. And then, I write about it in the book, but it's like, it still makes me like, whatever. I'm really happy that this happened, but it really, so they passed after a year and like the development execs we worked with were great. And we really thought they loved it. And like, I think they did. And then it kind of gets to the top and then there's a no. And we heard that it was a pass because it was too girly.
What does that mean?
And that was like the quote that we were told.
Would you like me to mansplain that, ladies?
Yes, yeah. Please. Tell me what girly means.
I don't know.
And I also, like, what a shitty
thing to say.
Shitty thing to say. And also like you're making one, I'm like, does it, that's like in like a one that's a, I don't think Broad City is necessarily girly, but it's not a bad thing either. Mm-hmm. And then it's almost like positioned as a negative,
right?
You know, whatever. But I ended up, I've never like gotten a show made over there. Maybe one day I will.
I'm actually shocked to hear them say something as dismissive because I think generally they do very good work and they're pretty smart mm-hmm. people. And
I know.
And artist friendly. So just that they would say something no, as dismissive and it's as a, that it's a, is surprising.
It bums me out because like of all the networks, I really do respond to a lot of their comedies. And I kind of feel like my voice is similar to a lot of their comedies, but mm-hmm. I just kind of feel like, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, because in the 90s, certainly, and even in the 2000s, it just felt like so male dominated, especially when you're talking about comedy. And then there was this moment that you and Alana were part of, and then also Inside Amy Schumer was very successful. Not that it's in quite the same category, but like Girls was successful. There were like a number of shows that were centering women that kind of all popped at the same time. And I mean, to what extent were you like aware of that, thinking about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were like forced to think about it. But when we were making the web series, we were not like, I think we were just so excited to have that control and to feel like, that time in our 20s when we're making the web series is so the window of time that we are constantly trying to replicate in the show Broad City. Mm-hmm. That feeling of like anything's possible. We just have to like put our heads together and like do it. That is like kind of what we were always trying to do. Abby and Alana in the show are not trying to break into Hollywood, but like whatever their task, it's like that feeling of like mm-hmm. anything's possible. And, you know, when we started pitching pre, you know, going to FX, we pitched all over town and we were, I always like forget about this on purpose because it annoys the fuck out of me. but, you know, we're pitching with Amy. Amy's like sitting with us in the room. And almost every single place we went, someone would be like, well, we do have the new girl already. So
right. We have our girl show.
And HBO was like, we have girls. So yeah. And it was like, I don't know what else was happening, but it was always like, well, how many shows about dudes is like they're everywhere? How many mm-hmm. fat, like we're not the same. Like I understand like at some point you have to like factor that in, mm-hmm. but it was just like, it was so clearly like there's room. It was exactly, I mean, I really feel like it was exactly the same of like the Herald team. There's like a spot for one or two girls on this team and six or seven guys shows, you know, like, it's so like transparent and I hope it's changing, but I think to a certain extent, we're still always compared to each other.
Well, you always talked about how New York City was a character in the show, and yeah, it really was. Yeah. I mean, you guys did an unbelievable job using Manhattan. Was there an ultimate Broad City, New York City moment?
Oh, man. It was so like, I don't know if meta is the right word, because in making this show, where I think we felt this the whole time, but you're really, again, like trying to tap into what it feels like. A lot of like the scenarios and the things are always trying to amplify what it feels like to do a thing in New York. And it's from that like very romantic place of someone who moves to New York, and that this city has all the possibility in it. And like, there's a lot of like grossness and shit and like sweat and tears and like fucked up stuff that you have to like kind of get through along the way. But in making it, we ended up like getting to experience these like really incredible, heightened things about New York. Like, I mean,
I can't go to that Bed Bath & Beyond down in Chelsea without thinking of you guys.
I mean, that's why my mom worked at Bed Bath & Beyond when I was a kid. That's where that came from. And like, she had all these friends and that's where that storyline came from. I mean, I honestly think that there were so many New York moments, but the one that's really calling out to me that is such a like picture of what the show is and what I just said is in the finale, when we are pushing a Toto toilet over the Brooklyn Bridge, because it's like a thing we found on the street that is like, Alana has been talking about Toto toilets forever. Like those are the really good ones. Like this can't go to waste. And like, we've been kind of dealing with we've kind of been like hinting at like anything that you put on the street in New York, like gets like scooped up. Cause like, that's what happens. And so we need to get it home. No cab will take it. And so we have to push it across the Brooklyn Bridge. And like, that was, I mean, it's our finale. Mm-hmm. And it's like the ultimate schlep. This show is about the schlep. And like, it's the ultimate schlep. And it's like our crew, like the Brooklyn Bridge was not closed for us, the pedestrian. There are just fucking people walking through while we are pushing to it, and our crew is in front of it. Like we had a pocket of like BG around us, but it was like so exactly what we're talking about. And we're like, the characters are dealing with like spoiler alert if no one's seen the show, dealing with like, the show is about this relationship and what happens when you grow, mm-hmm. and like change and need to leave? Like, what happens? And it's like, we're saying goodbye. You know, you end up saying goodbye again, but you're saying goodbye in the middle of the Brooklyn Bridge with a Toto toilet in the middle of us. And like, we're signing Abby and Alana forever on the Brooklyn Bridge. Like that, I don't think that when we started, we would have ever thought that we could have come up with like a more perfect moment in all the ways that like exemplifies how we felt about New York. Mm-hmm. And then the end, the last moment of the show, which Paul W. Downs, who is also a creator, also a star of Hacks, who, I mean, the Paul and Lucia and Jen Satsky, who all run that, all were extremely vital part of Broad City. And we were writing season 5 in LA, because they all lived down here at the time. And Paul came in one day and said, I had a vision of the end. And he said, basically, what happens? Mm-hmm. It's that at the end, like we hadn't exact at the end, you, it's not me or Alana. You, Alana goes into the subway and we stay up on the ground in in Union Square. And we see how many other Abby and Alanas there are. Mm-hmm. And that's what the show is about. Like, we are just following one. There are, like, you are, like, everyone, that's the whole thing of, like, that's, like, me and my best friend. Like, that's what I get all the time, which is, like, the best fucking compliment I could ever get, which is, like, no, you're gonna, the one time that we ever were allowed to afford a crane shot is the last fucking shot of the whole thing and pull out and you see all of these other pairs.
As they say, there's a million stories in the Broad City.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was like when he came in and like said, we were like, I mean, I have chills even thinking about it now. Like that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
So switching gears a little bit, you did move on from Broad City, moved to Los Angeles, least where you are these days. And now you're about to tell us about the new show you're about to launch.
Yeah. So I'm about to, it comes out August 12th and it's like a reimagining for TV version of A League of Their Own, which is people's favorite fucking movie. And the movie will always be available to watch and enjoy right here. Just because we're doing this doesn't mean the movie's going anywhere. But I'm like, it's so much pressure because people love this thing, this piece of content. And I do too. It's like a whole part of why I wanted to do it. And Will Graham, who had been a showrunner for a while on Mozart in the Jungle, and we were just acquaintances, we had a bunch of mutual friends, and he asked me if I wanted to do this with him when I was, I think, in the middle of making season 4 of Broad City. And we pitched the show in 2017. And so I didn't really know when we were going to end Broad City, but I knew I was like, couldn't say no to this. And we've been working on this for a really long time. And our initial conversations were all about this sort of thing of like, we're not trying to, this movie doesn't need a remake. It's more like the movie's 2 hours and the movie was done in 1992. And there's only so much real estate and only so much that Penny Marshall could say. And we're telling a lot more stories about women playing baseball in the 1940s. And some of them were on that league that the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League that the movie primarily focuses on. And some were, that league did not allow Black or Brown women to even try out. And that's not something that a 1992 movie was going to talk about. And right. We have the real estate of a at least a season right now, maybe more, hopefully more. There's just like so much more to tell about that era, about women playing baseball, about the one time in history there was an American professional baseball league for women, which there is not right now. And so that was really exciting. How are we, what other stories can we tell? And so that was always the intention of our version.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting to me because obviously these are two very different projects, but I do see connective tissue between Broad City and what A League of Their Own is doing, and that it's, you know, it's about female friendships. It's also about women who sort of feel like they're misfits a little bit. They don't quite fit in with, conform to what society expects of them. And that's, those themes I think are very much in Broad City as well. So I can understand why you were attracted to the material.
Yeah. And I mean, that was also, I mean, that's in the film, and also
sure.
Bill and I think I'm always like the dynamic I talk about with Broad City, and that found that person that I found, I mean, I feel that way about Real Alana. Like, that's why we did, you know, we did it. I do feel like I mean, I love Max and Clance on In League. Like, that dynamic is a friendship that is like family, and that is like no other. And then they're like Greta and Joe, like that, like, and you'll see if you keep watching, there are dynamics in this show that itch that forever scratch I have of mm-hmm. what it feels like to have your people, and then what it feels like when that gets like, that changes.
So we have a first question that we always ask, and a yep. last question that we tend to ask, which is, aside from, you know, Broad City and shows that you've been in, what is your favorite cable TV show of all time?
I would maybe say It's Always Sunny. Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Those guys, I feel very like connected to those guys and how they started. Like, I think they like put out, there's like a little doc about how they made mm-hmm. theirs. I feel very connected to like that beginning, and like even like the meta-ness of their dynamic, their like friendship feels like real too. And mm-hmm. I mean, like, is it still on?
Yeah, yes. Still going.
It's all longevity. Right, is
cut that, but like, it's no, crazy. No,
they're allowed to still like, be on.
It's crazy that they're still going. And
yeah.
You just get a sense of one, just like some of the funniest characters ever. And just like, they are, I mean, I'm all about, I guess I will forever make content that is about like finding your people mm-hmm. and like what it is like when you find your people. And I'm like, those are like, that group is so fucking weird and unique and specific and like insane
and funny
and funny. Yeah. And I just like really, I really admire those guys.
Well, that's a perfect answer.
Yeah.
So again, Abby Jacobson, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you taking time when you're very busy getting ready to put on your new show, League of Their Own, which hopefully everybody will check out. And it was great having you.
Thank you so much for having me. Really, thanks, it's so Abby. Much fun.
So many things about that conversation with Abby Jacobson were interesting to me, but I'll start with the first one, which is, the whole idea that Broad City was dismissed initially for being too quote unquote girly, which reminded me, if I can briefly make this about Clueless for just a moment, when Amy Heckerling, who directed and wrote that film, was pitching Clueless, one of the pieces of feedback she got at one point, and I forget which studio it was, this is good, but can you make it more about the guys? And the whole point of the movie, first of all, is that it's about Cher. Second of all, it's based on Emma by Jane Austen, which is about Emma. Like, it was just, they didn't even understand what she was trying to do. And it's just, and that was 20 years at least before Broad City came around. So the idea that those conversations are still happening, or were still happening then, and I'm sure happen from time to time now, like, it's just so depressing.
Well, I think that's all right. But, you know, thank God that the world has people like Abby Jacobson who make shows that, by the way, that my teenage sons at the time were huge Broad City fans and you know, just loved the show, thought it was hilarious, loved them. And to them, it wasn't a show about women. It was a show about friends. Mm-hmm. And you know, she obviously talked quite a bit about, you know, friendship and relationships and your people. And, you know, she's got a great way of expressing that. And I couldn't be more anxious to see what she does with The League of Their Own in that mm-hmm. regard.
Yeah. I mean, I always felt like Broad City had a lot of crossover. I mean, you know, my husband and I used to watch it together. I have a lot of male friends who enjoyed it as much as any of my female friends did. It's true. It's a woman's story, but just because something's about women doesn't mean that it's not relatable to other people. And I'm glad, obviously, that the folks at Comedy Central recognize that.
Yeah. And by the way, we've talked about this a bunch, particularly you and I in these conversations. You know, I remember debating that show. And I think I know Amy's show had already been on and I think was a hit.
Yeah.
And even then, I think we just debated. And I think it was less about it being, you know, sort of female focused. And I think it was just more about, like, is this right for us? And and are these, you know, are these two women, the women that are going to, you know, sort of bring this home? And you know, we mentioned, and hopefully we mentioned Kent Alterman in the body of the interview. But, you know, he was running Comedy Central that time. And he was the reason that show got on the air. He was a big believer in Abby and Alana and what they were doing and was certain that they were going to be able to deliver and that the show was going to be right for Comedy Central. And he was. So good for us.
Yeah. And like I said, when we were talking, you know, I do think that some of the same like thematic elements, even though it's a very different kind of show, are still present in A League of Their Own. And it makes a lot of sense to me that Abby was attracted to that and wanted to make that show, because I feel like it's, even though it's a period piece and it's more dramatic in a lot of ways than Broad City was, it's still like, that makes sense to me. If you're looking at a body of work, like, of course she would want to do that.
Right. I didn't realize she had been working on it so long. That was sort of news to me.
Yeah, I guess I didn't remember that either. Probably in part because things got lost during the pandemic and I just lost track of where a lot of things were in the development and production process. It's got to be gratifying to finally see it come to fruition.
Yeah, like I said, I'm excited. I'm an Abby fan and I'm a baseball fan. So this is this will be a good one for me. And I just want to say for the record, I thought Girls was a really good show. I just
too
thought
late Broad, now. You have
thought,
not.
I thought Broad City was better. That's
no
all.
One on Girls will ever speak to us again.
Well, I was going to say we're never getting any of them on this show, so we'll have to.
Not now.
Not now. Not now. Not ever. Well, I hope you enjoyed our visit with Abby Jacobson, and Jen and I hope you will join us next time on Basic. Basic is a Pantheon Media production in partnership with SiriusXM, hosted by Jen Chaney
and Doug Herzog, produced by Christian Swain and Peter Ferrioli.
Lindley Ehrlich is our assistant producer.
Mixed, mastered, and music by Jerry Danielson.
Edited by Zach Spisner.
You can find Basic on Apple Podcasts, the SiriusXM app, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. If you like the show, please rate, review, and share so other people can find us. Don't forget to follow the show so you never miss an episode.